Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
Phrenobulax.
Gotham.
More pirates, that's what we need.
Yeah.
As long as they're not barb galleys.
God.
Yeah.
I agree.
Barb galleys in sort of the 20th century. It's like, what, you know, this is just not realistic.
Oh, no, a barb galley has just took over your destroyer.
Yeah.
Barbarian transports, barbarian destroyers, barbarian battleships. There you go, Phil. You happy now?
Nuke him.
As long as they actually have a counter, unlike barb galleys on high level.
I think barbarian battleships is... I draw the line at barbarian battleships.
How can you disagree with alliteration? Alliteration is so cool. Barbarian battleship. It's just the natural fit.
Yeah, you would definitely want fighters.
In the research lab, we talked about...
technological advance, gambling on faster research, or splitting it.
Alternate forms of governments that might work or might not.
And elevation and terrain features. From the vault, earned traits. Under the miscellaneous category, hidden hotkeys, tips, and tricks. Then further from the vault, top 10 you feel so good win in Civ 4. How to spot hogs in multiplayer, and deselecting waypoint locations.
Come on into the research lab, where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future.
Technological advance one. Started by our Jetnix, this thread suggests the possibility of setting your research to multiple texts at the same time, or possibly allowing one to hurry research.
Yeah, I mean, I actually do kind of like the idea of adding more nuance to your technology selections, because that is more in real life.
Yeah, so your research ends up being, instead of a single focus on a particular technology being quite linear, it's now you're multitasking, so when you discover a technology, you can end up with more than one technology in a particular turn. You just have to wait a little while longer to get them.
Right. It would be more graded, basically.
Yeah.
I think within the scheme of current Civ, it would be pretty awkward to implement, though. I mean, you can do this to an extent with bulbing, of course, but your incentive, at least currently, because of the way trades are forced in this game, would be to avoid this feature like the plague and put all your research onto one tech, just that you can get more techs more readily, rather than slowly getting multiple ones at the same time.
Oh, that's true.
Because essentially getting one tech is getting multiple techs at the same time under the current system. Say you have a couple techs that would all benefit you. Rather than waiting, say, 50 turns to get all of those at the same time, maybe getting one of them sooner, like on turn 20, would be a more prudent thing, just because it would accelerate your research further. So unless you had a decided bonus for researching multiple techs at the same time, there'd be absolutely no incentive to use this at all. The hurry research thing is kind of interesting. It's like gambling for beakers, I guess.
And I do like the idea of expressing it positively, in that you would get a benefit from doing that as opposed to a negative for not going that way.
Well, what I was thinking was, like, if you're going to research two technologies at once, you might as well just get some things for half completing a tech. If you are, like, halfway through astronomy, you get one extra movement point in gallons or whatever, because you don't have to have fully discovered a tech to gain certain benefits from it, if that makes sense.
Again, thinking of some of the games, going back to this Hearts of Iron game I mentioned earlier, within that you have research groups, so you can research up to 5 techs at one time, but your ability to research your tech is tied to the tech team that actually does the research, so it's like having kind of research groups or companies that are actually doing the researching for you, like the Ford Motor Company researching to build tanks, or another group researching Wernher von Braun to research rocketry, you know, you could actually introduce another layer behind the technology research. So you still research one thing at a time, but you spend some points or something on developing your scientist's specialization so that certain kinds of tech might be researched quicker. But I think within the current framework of the game, it just wouldn't wash having this kind of wide front of research. Tech research is very linear in Civ, and I just don't know how you would incorporate that into the game.
I don't know. I don't think it would be that bad. At halfway through a tech, you could just gain some of the benefits from that tech and then gain the other final ones later.
Well, no, but if you're researching rocketry, I mean, you can't sort of have half a rocket, you know, or you're half a wheel, you know. I mean, I don't see how that's going to work. Either you know something or you don't.
Plus, you have to factor in how the AI would handle it, partial trades, the benefits of that versus banking gold and then using deficit research with stronger sliders. Mm. It would be extremely hard to fit that into a system where the payouts on techs are pretty finite, actually.
Yeah.
As for the half-rocket issue, Silurian, in the discussion, says that, say a tech costs 1,000 research and it gives you one building, one unit, one wonder, and one improvement. How would you value each part? So that way, if you were partway through your research, if you get one building, one unit, one wonder, and one improvement for 1,000 research, then at 250, I think the idea being then you get that building or that unit or that wonder or that improvement, and then you research another 250 more, and then you get one more of those components. But Argentix also says that what you're doing is you're trading the ability to build something that requires a certain technology. Building that thing gives you experience and allows the required technology to be researched faster. And I can't help but thinking about how, of course, in Civ right now, if you're going down a particular technology path linear, so long as technology trading is on, then if you have a tech that's farther down one particular branch of the tree, not only can you research some of the older technologies down the other paths more quickly on the reasonable assumption that other civilizations have researched it and you've met those individuals, but then you can then trade that particular technology that you know, speaking specifically to the AI at least, that they don't go for, and then you can trade that one technology for a whole bunch of technologies farther back in the technology tree. So in that way, that aspect that Argentic is saying is already in the game. We don't need this for that.
A lot of his suggestions are based on things that, in reaction to the fact that he doesn't like a lot of the things that were changed from Civ 3 to Civ 4. I know I've gotten into some heated discussion with him way back when, so I do recall the name. I give him credit. He comes up with a lot of new ideas, and some of them have at least parts of them that are workable. So even though we don't see eye to eye on whether or not Civ 4 is better than Civ 3, which clearly it is, I still laud his efforts, though.
Now, Silurian also made the comment that with Argentix is talking about here, that it would, quote, make it easier for backward civs to catch up, unquote.
Don't think we want that, do we?
I don't know if we want it to be easier for backward civs to catch up.
Later, he came up with the idea of license producing something from a certain tech, and I thought that was kind of interesting. I think that it would probably make it more accurate if it were implemented correctly. Otherwise, it has a huge potential for abuse.
I license you to produce this now, but a little later on, you no longer have that license to produce it, so you can never produce it. There you go. That's a potential abuse if you're not paying close enough attention. Because if you license something from somebody and then you're going on to something else, you can lose it at any point in time, because then they decide they don't want to license that to you anymore, and you have to go back and get it. And then how does that come into play?
I think the username is Argetnix. It's from a thread titled Governments. Yes, if anybody from Civ 3, they're tired of complicated civics, just complicate things. Anybody from Civ 4 that wants more options, but less decisions. So he lists out three government types, democratic, authoritarian, and socialist. Well, those are all modern. There's a problem right there.
This Mackie editorial brought to you by podcast. Best kind.
I like the editorial. Go on.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just covering our legal basis here. Continue.
And he says, right now you're thinking this simplifies things a bit too much. And he says, don't you worry, because you don't choose what type you want your people to. I'm already seeing another problem there.
The migraines start to set in at that line? It didn't mean.
Each civ has a certain amount of drift towards a certain type of government. His example was America's historically democratic, so they'll naturally drift towards democratic. While Germany is traditionally authoritarian, they'll naturally drift towards authoritarian. And you list out later that you cannot directly control this drift, but it's affected by different things. Like if you're next to democratic civ, you might drift more towards that way. There's just natural drift, election of different types of officials, or the placement of different types of officials, depending on which government you're already in. Wars with a civ of a different type. Like if you're democratic and you're fighting authoritarian, your people go, ew, authoritarian, ew. And national crisis, which I guess would be a sort of event. And Emitzi hasn't completely thought it out, but it's a start.
Yeah, we can see that. I assume by natural drift he means a historical drift that he was referring to earlier. It's not defined.
It is not clarified what natural drift is supposed to be.
I think that civ can be, certainly with scenarios, for example, just to start with that point, can be about reliving history in that respect, but to me, and I think to a lot of people, the point or the underlying thing of civ is to rewrite history, kind of a what if, not just here's a scenario, here's what we know what did happen, now with the same set of parameters, everything, do the same thing again. But talking about rewriting history, I mean, even reimagining history is perhaps a more accurate way of put it, you know, starting over, pressing the reset button. So talking about a natural drift or an historical drift for particular civilizations, that in and of itself struck me first as, no, not in general gameplay.
Yeah, I don't like that you lose the control element. I don't like that you could potentially get hosed just because you're next to Montezuma and Shaka or something, for example.
Yeah, because there's probably advantages to being democratic as opposed to, say, authoritarian, which is, I guess, what they would fall under. And I don't want to go that way.
Yeah, and you would essentially drift right over there, almost no matter what you do.
I didn't really think that this would be more interesting as like a moddable component in terms of, I think that the idea of having your people control the civics has been brought up before, but I don't necessarily see that this is a great solution to this. I think that most of us have been acclimated to the current civic system, and I actually don't see a current problem with this at all. I don't like the idea of having your people be able to determine your civics, because the whole premise of civ is that you are the leader. You determine.
People invested absolute authority in you, I believe it says.
Yeah. The only thing that your people ever have a say about is whether they want emancipation or not. They just become unhappy when they see other people having it. But other... yeah, I know,
you
I know.
Rant?
I know Phil is like, yes, I remember. I know, but like...
It's a good gameplay element, but the AI doesn't handle it right.
Well, might just as well play Rise and Fall of Civilization if you want more historic accuracy.
Whether we're talking about governments or civics, having the player have less ability to control, I mean, if they choose to put stuff on automate, for example, or not pay attention to something, that's their choice. But if you're saying from the outset, no, you don't even have that choice when it comes to this control, oh dear, I find myself drifting away from wanting to play. I'm sorry, was that too harsh? Are we going to get hate mail for that? Am I going to get hate mail for that?
Hopefully, hate mail is fun.
Is it Civ 2 the way you, as a democracy, you couldn't declare war in certain cases? I'm just trying to think back to...
Oh, yeah, the Senate would stop you.
No, they would forcibly end it, too.
50% of the time.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't born when Civ 2 came out. Just kidding.
Oh,
that's a depressing thought.
Excuse me while I go get my false teeth and cane.
I think I was alive.
I was pretty young during Civ 2, though.
Oh.
Well, I did stop playing in the last century, so maybe that, yeah.
you started the last century. I started playing in the last millennium, so I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, last millennium, yes. Yeah,
oh, yeah. Man.
But I think that idea of democracy is being harder to wage war without a sort of reasonable cause might be interesting. But I think this idea of civilizations drifting away from their leaders, and a game is about rewriting history, not about re-experiencing it. So,
right. The premise of Civ is that you are always a leader. Like, whatever changes about your civics or your people, you are always the player in control. So from like a player-centric perspective, it doesn't completely make sense, but because you don't want to take functionality away from the player. At the same time, I, as a player, kind of like the idea of another random aspect of the play.
Hmm.
One thing I like is having decisions, variable decisions that are actually plausible. So you get some choices and there's some situations where you would actually favor one against the other. And this actually takes that away from us relative to the current civic system as well. There's really only a couple civics that are completely useless. Serfdom, for example, whereas most of them at least have some situational benefit. I'd be loath to give up that kind of choice because it has strategic depth to it.
Civ isn't a spectator sport. It's about controlling things. You know, if you want to just sit back and let your population do what they like, you know, go and play The Sims or something, you know.
Well, no, there's an AI autoplay mod. And
I suppose,
you can do that too.
Yeah, true.
Yep, and you can find yourself the ability to not build anything in a city mod, and...
I think that falls under the bug category, actually.
There's a mod where you don't actually play the game.
The natural drifting, actually, in addition to the nihilism word, I learned another word by reading this from a Locke's Donkey, where he says, "We can have changes in the form of government be driven by social and economic conditions within your civilization, but the idea of a natural drift is codswallop." Does anybody know what that is? Is that a British word, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, it's rubbish. Nonsense.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it, but from context, it's kind of implied that that's what it would mean.
It's a polite way of saying bullshit.
Yeah, pretty much.
I was going to say bullshit.
Want to get lost in your rock and roll, so drift away. What?
Oh, no, he violated the singing rule.
I sure did.
This gives me the right to sing happy birthday to Ian later on, you know what I'm saying?
And was this not his rap version? I'd rather have that in plain text.
Elevation and terrain features.
Oh, yeah. I love this topic. I was looking at it, and I was thinking it was just, like, a really great idea. Like, even though increases in tile yields are already important, I just don't like the idea of having mountains just not improved, ever. Not all mountains are the Himalayas, per se. You know, not only would it be closer to real life, but it would just add another interesting aspect of gameplay. I think I agree more with the idea of assigning specific elevations, like 10,000 meters or something.
And that seemed to be a lot of what this discussion was coming into play, is what kind of scale are we going to be having here? Sea level up 500-meter intervals, or 0 to 10, or from sea level to 6,500. And it started to go off the deep end by talking about underwater cities. Ha ha! All right.
Did it in.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. I'll be here for the rest of the recording. But I do like the idea also of elevation, and honestly, I don't care what scale we're talking about here. I don't want to get into the underwater cities thing, because then that talks about extending the technology tree, and now we're just spiraling out of control. But having it so that you either get an advantage or a disadvantage from attacking from certain elevations or defending on certain elevations is an interesting idea, and I think it can play into strategy and not be too tactical.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it doesn't conflict and wreck the balance of the game or something. But actually, the first thing that came to mind that would be problematic with it would be just, is it too computationally expensive? But if that weren't the case, I wouldn't mind seeing it in the game at all.
Actually, another problem is visually it would be very difficult, because 10 different elevations is kind of hard to see visually. We have to hover with your mouse, and that takes more time.
That's true. The way you'd see it would have to be done very well, otherwise you'd be in danger. And having it physically appear as higher or lower, which is actually what I had in mind when I said it would be more computationally expensive, that would be a way to get around that problem, but then it would look very different.
And I know I can already hear some people saying, oh, but then you get into system requirement issues and accessibility to the game, because perhaps you could have like low-end graphics or something like that, and then it wouldn't be represented that way. Then it would have to be represented with a bunch of a text or something like that. I mean, that's kind of a side issue. But as soon as you started getting into trying to represent that on screen, for it to be able to be, as I said, as natural as possible, so that you could tell at a glance what it was without being too distorted or too blocky or something like that. Like in Civilization 4, you've got a resource display that you can toggle, for example. Perhaps something along those lines.
Yeah, but something on every tile would be distracting.
Well, you could have it so that wherever there was a change in elevation, that would be marked so that it wouldn't end up being on every particular tile. Now, in terms of, well, what direction are you going from? The change in elevation from the northeast, southwest, or whatever, yeah, you'd have to decide on that.
I don't see a way it could be done without actually drawing it in as going up and down on elevation, which might be feasible, but maybe not right away. Maybe we have to wait for machines to catch up to that sort of thing. Also, Civ 4 could do a lot better with how it handles its resources. It draws a lot of computing power, despite the fact that it's a turn-based strategy game. So they'd have to get around that issue if they were going to make it even more demanding.
Civilization 5, coming to an IMAX theater near you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Forget your glasses.
If you have a terabyte processor, then go ahead.
Glasses sold separately. Don't!
This is a vault segment with topics cut from earlier episodes, but have found relevance again later.
From episode 76 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mean Team, Rough High, and Troy Goodfellow. Earned traits from Civ Help 121. I was thinking about how civilization is supposed to be your own world and your own history, but we still use civilizations that are in our history. That said, they should probably stay there because that works. But what if there was an option where you can create your own civilization and the traits you gain are based on your playing style? For example, let's say the player builds tons of units and the military is the player's biggest advantage, then the player would get the militaristic trait. Or if the player is best in terms of economy, then the player would earn the financial trait. Instead of militaristic trait, perhaps he means aggressive. Huh.
You can actually make your own leaders if you want. If you want it to be your civ, your way. You can make your philosophical industrious leader and get some art on and just use that and put that in the leaderhead XMLs, and there you go. Make yourself of whatever country you want to be or civ you want to be, and you can do that. But I actually do like the idea of earned traits. Not traits, but like less huge bonuses. Something for if you focus your civilization a certain way, like towards military or towards commerce or something, where if you did that for a long enough period of time, you could build up some kind of bonus. But I think to the extent of traits is a little over the top.
I'm not sure about this idea. If you want to play a military game, you choose an aggressive leader or an imperialistic leader. If you want to play a teching game, you choose a financial leader. Don't you automatically choose your own traits instead of just starting with a blank sheet and your traits developing out of your gameplay?
Well, yes, but if you have a situation where somebody can build their advantage by sticking to one thing for an extended period of time, there's some depth added there because there's incentive for other civilizations to attempt to interfere with them attaining that. For example, if you have a lot of successful war for a long period of time, maybe you get an extra promotion, or maybe you just get one extra experience point on all of your units. Instead of 3 experience points with the barracks, you'll get 4 now, or something like that. Nothing major, but just something you can earn that gives other people an incentive to stop you. Gives you incentive to focus your play.
Right, but the game already does that. If you go on a huge military campaign, at the end of the campaign, you come out with a whole stack of units with really high promotions.
And great generals, yeah.
Well, even like a whole lot of units around the 20 promotion mark, putting aside the great generals, you war, they get better promoted, they're stronger, it's easier for you to war next time. So you automatically build that sort of mini trait.
In the thread, there was even a point about making the earned traits being fluid. So at some point, if you built up this military advantage early on in the game, then you would get that aggressive trait. But then if you scaled back and you shifted, then you would lose that advantage. And then if you decided to then go, say, as you say, in the tech route, so you get, say, the financial trait, which seemed to me to be really putting it over the top and making it traits if it was fluid like that. I could certainly see the argument in a way for that. But it's possible that you could end up choosing an aggressive civ, but never actually being aggressive, either because you didn't realize you had the aggressive trait and you could do that to your advantage, or you found yourself in a situation where I've got the aggressive trait, but I'm not going to end up using it, but you still always have it.
Well, let's look at some of the other traits. How would you go about developing the spiritual trait? You revolt every 5 turns?
You build a lot of temples?
But you're going to build temples anyway.
Well, yeah, but you go out of your way to make sure you've got them in every city, even small little frontier cities or something.
You only build temples if they're the AP religion.
Oh, jeez.
Well, here's another idea. If Civ 5 made it where you could have a custom civilization, the way, you know, when you play Gal Civ or the Master of Orions, and you can make a custom Civ out of other traits that were already there, but you had to somehow in play unlock some of the more advanced traits. Like, you'd start out with the basic bonuses, but you could unlock more advanced ones. Like, if you won a bunch of victories from Conquest, you might unlock some better military bonuses or something.
Like a quest.
Yes, but an unwritten quest.
Fill it down like an earned trait to like an earned bonus. It really does become something like a quest. As long as it's available to all civilization, you know, as opposed to what I hate about events, then it could add some depth to the game if it's done well.
Yeah, that's the tricky part.
But I think it would be an interesting dynamic if they wanted to add that. Definitely not opposed to the idea. I think it could be fun, potentially.
As Ignorant Teacher said, it would be difficult to tune the AI personality right, in my opinion. Quote unquote, that would be a big part of the balance consideration. And I don't know how difficult that would be. I'm not a programmer, but game balance is always key, obviously. You want to have it so that, yes, that it could apply to everybody, but that the AI would also, at least if you don't want to say that they would be awesome at it or that they would suck at it, that they would be decent at it.
Yeah.
You would want to be able to do that in testing. The humans can do this, yes, this looks good, but then if you tried with the AI and the AI wasn't able to do it properly or do it very well, then you might have to say, oh, shoot, I guess not right now, not unless we can figure out a way around whatever the issue happens to be, whatever the hang-up happens to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it would depend on the bonuses. There's a lot of things the AI is, to be frank, terrible at right now. It'll get lucky in like 10% of its games or less where it'll actually be a threat to win the Apostolic Palace, but it never makes a concerted effort to do that. It doesn't really work other AIs for UN victories, and they're really terrible in terms of essentially pursuing the military wins, too. Okay, so just with the base game, you have problems. Without better AI, they're not even that great at specializing their cities. So I think it would be hard to get them to the point where they'd be markedly better than they are in standard gameplay in terms of this. But I think you could get something comparable in terms of their ability to handle the many bonuses. And just with their basic activity as defined in the XML, I think it would lead to them earning certain bonuses more often than not.
When I read the title, I thought, oh, right, I know what this is about. And then an actual thread was totally different. I thought this was you choose your two traits, and then you do something to inherit either a third trait or half a trait. You know, like if you're not creative and you build the Stonehenge, you've sort of got half of the creative trait. So you got 2.5 traits for free. Well, not for free, for 120 hammers. That's what I thought the title was about.
Oh.
So you want more wonders that work like half traits?
What other ways of getting additional features? Like, what's the civilization that gives culture for their granary? Is that Inca?
Inca. Terraces.
So basically they've got a creative trait just on a platter for them. Sort of.
Sort of.
Where unique buildings give semi-feelings of traits. That's what I thought the title was about.
Hidden hotkeys, tips, and tricks, please. So this person is looking, not having to do quite so many clicks. Phil, you had quite a few, actually, in there.
You just had to pick one of my rant threads, huh?
Did you have a rant in that thread? Gee, I didn't notice.
Well, you have quite a number of threads to choose from if you want to pick up a rant thread that I've had a presence in. I'm surprised you actually picked one, but that's besides the point. Really, the most useful thing in this thread is right above my post, which has a link to them. But yeah, I have a lot of complaints about game control, actually. There's a lot of the shortcuts don't quite function properly. And they seem to function variably between multiplayer and single player. And at first I thought it was just my cruddy PC, because I mean, I was on the ancient PC, like it was a legend prior to getting this one. But I also ran into these troubles on my laptop and on my new machine. So I know now that this is a consistent thing, and then I've had other people verify a lot of these issues too that use it. Like the alt control and shift clicking, and it'll create groups and you can't undo the group without unselecting every single unit, or
yeah.
You know, you click on land units, it picks navy, or after you alt click on something, you cannot just unselect one unit.
There's all kinds of problems like that. I'm working on a master list on that on the bug report, just because it's so bad. And then multiplayer does the interesting thing where it will, if you control click on a set of units, say swordsmen, it'll only select the swordsmen with all their movement points. And even if you control click again, it will not select the swordsmen with partial unit points.
It's like it considers them a different unit.
Yeah, but it won't do that in single player for some reason. So I don't know what's going on with the code here, but there's definitely issues with these shortcuts. Now, a lot of the other ones, like setting waypoints and stuff that I covered in my guide, and a lot of the other stuff that's shown in this master list here above my post, do work. I mean, it's not like they're all broken, but there's enough to significantly hamper your play if you're trying to play quickly and make use of the shortcuts, which is why I got into such a crazy rant.
I have nothing to add at all, which just does not mean that I was expecting you to just rant, Phil, while I had the opportunity to say nothing. That was not my intention at all.
No, of course not. What, am I going to be Sif's version of the angry video game nerd now?
This is a Vault segment with topics cut from earlier episodes, but have found relevance again later.
From episode 54 with Dan Q, Makalua, Imran Siddiqui, Cardamandua, and Pimpy McPimp. Another thread started by Codver. You feel so good when... The top 10 you feel so good when in Civ. From Kevy, number 10, you're Rome, and you get the swordsman quest with the last swordsman just one turn away from completing the quest. Happy conquest. That's why it's 10. Number 9, from Firestorm94, the AI doesn't ask you to stop trading with or declare war on your best friend. Number 8, from Harry Potter 52, when Tokugawa is imprisoned on an island. Number 7, from Levin Merchant, when you manage to be the first to get the Oracle and Liberalism in the same game. Number 6, from E-Wazi, when out of the blue a neighbor offers themselves to you as a vassal state. Abby Rebo has number 5, you figure out that the bum you're trying to rush off the map ASAP doesn't have medals.
That does feel good.
see. Number 4, from Omet Jab, I concoct Diabolical Plan and it actually works out the way I plan, instead of it blowing up in my face as it used to do. Yeah, that's right. Number 3, Kip Beagle says, the weekend comes and you don't have to worry about work for a couple of days. Want to stay up till 4 a.m. playing Civ? Don't mind if I do.
Doesn't feel so good the next day, though.
Truly.
From Late Game Warmong, you get Astronomy First by a sufficient margin on a Terra map. A whole continent for myself? Don't mind if I do. And finally from Pie Man, you just managed to snatch a victory from the jaws of defeat via a space race or diplomatic win. Yep.
Those are fun.
From episode 83 with Dan Q, Demian Team, Kamikaze, Heraclitus, MMC, Peach Rocks, and QNL.
Speaking of spam, Philip?
Oh, jeez.
He's the spam master or what?
It's going to be this hog.
He's a hog.
Discussion. Just, I had to take the bait. This store just been closed already, but anyway, the original poster, Ermac, was saying that you can identify some of the worst players based on their name, and apparently a lot of people came down on him, like, almost instantly that he's a hog, which I thought was funny, but also that he himself was one.
Well, it's when you posted us, noticed someone responded with, do you get out much?
Probably not, but yeah, whatever.
And also, it's the fact the thread was closed by saying, moderator action, hog spotted, spam.
That was hilarious. But I still believe what I put there. You know, there's not so much in Civ. I don't actually see a lot of players with the names I described in Civ. Even on GameSpy, as bad as GameSpy is relative to the other modes of play in Civ, it's still orders of magnitude better than what you'd encounter in a typical online community.
That is so true.
So what I cite here is mostly Halo 3 and Gears of War and Madden experience.
I've always wanted to do a test, an actual test, to go along with the empirical evidence of some guy's name, not even a character reference, just actual name followed by a couple numbers, and the percentage of time that this player has an above average versus below average performance in a given game. It kind of feels like losing a 90% odds battle when one of those players actually does well. And also those people with a bunch of X's before and after their name.
If you got someone who has, say, 117 after their name playing Halo, that is a reasonable idea of name.
Well, and I qualified that that is an exception.
Yeah, that sort of thing works, because 117 happens to be the ID number of Master Chief in Halo. So that sort of thing works. And yet someone who's like DanQ773, what the hell is that number?
Yeah.
Area code from Chicago. It is.
And if it's somebody's birthday, that's usually not a good sign either.
Yeah, my birthday is on July 73rd.
Well, not in that specific case, although that would be really bad too, I guess.
You get problems with names with random letters as well as numbers, like anyone who ends their name with a Q.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there
might
go.
Be a crap player.
Oh, those people who use their names that are all L's or 1's, or like capital I's, those are bad news also, just incidentally.
Do they do that to confuse people?
Well, I see it more in like Warcraft 3 or like RTS online, because you can't check their stats, because you don't know what the hell, is that a letter, a number, or the other letter? It's impossible. If you're playing ladder, you can't use any third-party programs, so there's just no way of knowing the record of the person you're playing against, unless they like whisper you or something, but they usually won't say anything at all. But yeah, I don't have a lot of gripes with Civ players in general, other than like the pause grievers online, but I haven't really studied naming tendencies for those types.
I think if someone happens to have a number in their name, as a general approach, if you want to think of that as kind of a caution, I should be watching maybe what this person is actually saying, like in a lobby. For instance, if you're trying to decide whether or not you want to play with that person in the game, then I think it's more important to be paying attention to what it is they're saying and how they're saying it over a few minutes. Ask them a couple of questions, whatever those questions happen to be, and then decide. As I say, if you want to use it as kind of a caution, but just to say, people with numbers in their names are always hogs. Well, always is a problem.
Well.
It's such a broad stroke, you're not giving them a chance.
There's going to be multiple exceptions to pretty much everything, especially with an inexact science like this. There's some exceptions. There have been some very good players who have really crappy naming in terms of what they're playing as. But certainly in Civ, when you're going to commit to a very long game, it makes sense to just talk to the player a little bit. See if they, first of all, if they respond at all, as it's a bad sign if they don't, if they're just going to quit like the second that something goes wrong. And also to see how they respond, sure. In other games, I don't have that luxury, unfortunately. You just get ladder matched and you have players on your team and you have to deal with them. But in Civ, it's a good idea to make sure that the people you're playing with are worth your time.
From episode 85 with Dan Q, Makalua, the main team, QNL, and Imran Siddiqui.
There's been a couple of topics started on the forum recently, one by Dennis G, and also one by MJF200, asking how to unset the waypoint command. Basically, to set a waypoint, you select a city or group of cities, and then right-click on a point. And people, understandably, can't figure out how to get rid of those. All you have to do is select whatever cities you want to cancel the waypoint, and then right-click on one of them. So like if it's one city, just select the one city and shift right-click on your city. And that'll get rid of the waypoint. Now, if you want to do this for all your cities, then select all your cities and shift and right-click on any of them, and that cancels the waypoint. And an important thing to add to that is, if you want a waypoint to a city, make sure that city isn't selected, or you cancel your waypoints.
I like the idea in theory, and I'd love to be able to do it, but I find that every single time I think about doing it, have difficulty setting it or unsetting it, so I just avoid it altogether, which is unfortunate, because I know in the long run I would still save myself time.
Well, let me just tell you what I do specifically then. I will usually set rally points based on continents. And to select all the cities on the continent, you just hold down Control and click on one of the cities on the continent. To set a waypoint to one of those cities, instead of canceling it, you have to unselect your target city. That's the annoying part. That's probably messing you and a lot of our listeners up as well, is if you shift right-click on a selected city, you undo the waypoints, which is what they're asking how to do here. But if you actually want to set a waypoint to a city, it can't be selected.
What I'll do is I'll control-click on all cities, shift and left-click on the target city, and then shift and right-click on the target city, and that sets everything on the same continent to go there.
Yeah, honestly, I use waypoints about half the time I play, and I would always just set a waypoint to just to a tile that wasn't a city, just because I didn't know how to set it to a city.
Yeah, it's a lot more convenient if they go in the city for you, especially if you're launching like an intercontinental invasion. Just stack up all your units in one city and all your boats there, and then when you're ready, load them on
yeah.
as a big stack instead of individually.
Sometimes I really wish they wouldn't send other units to the waypoints, like workers and settlers, because I'm just like, I don't want them to fight.
Yeah, usually when I queue up one of those, I cancel the waypoints for an individual city. Missionaries and Corpixex are important to do that too, because I like loop building those, like alt-clicking on them, and you can only build so many at once. If you already have 3 missionaries or 5 executives, it just automatically stops building them, and you have to tell the city to do it again. So if you waypoint them off somewhere, it's going to build several of them before they actually do any spreading, and then you're kind of stuck. You have to go micro them all, and it's a big pain, so I often cancel waypoints for those as well.
Just a quick question. Is there extra maintenance cost for having units outside of cities?
It's when you get them outside your culture borders. It can be pretty steep if you're sending like hundreds of units across the world.
But you could still set a waypoint other than going to a city and then loading them onto ships. You could do that too, but I guess you're saying the advantage would be, well, certainly if you're worried about defense of that city, it'll probably not.
Well,
does it really matter if it's in the city or adjacent to it so long as they can then springboard onto the ship?
No, it doesn't. It's just a...
It doesn't matter.
I don't know. That might actually be a good idea since the game is kind of flawed in terms of how it selects units. If you try to select all your ground units, it'll sometimes select all the Navy. But sometimes I waypoint the Navy into a water tile adjacent, and then the land units into the city. So it's sort of like doing that. I just do it with the water units instead of the land units.
Yeah, I always wanted to put my units in the cities just because hereditary rule stuff.
All that too.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Yeah, well, again, Ian, happy birthday.
Yes.
Oh, thanks
happy
so much.
Birthday.
Yeah. Can we sing for Ian? Okay, let's start one.
All right.
Two, three.
Happy birthday. We gotta get our tempo right here. Oh dear. you know what? I think I have a better way of putting this. Ian, who would you like to sing happy birthday to you?
QNL? Lisa? I think because she just started it, so.
Oh, there you go. All right. Lisa has a solo. All right.
Sorry
Let's
to put
hear it, Lisa.
Like
pressure's on.
I didn't sign up for this. No, okay.
But in your contract, we are allowed to ask you to do these things.
Well, everybody's hit stop on their 27th birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Ian. Happy birthday to you. There we go.
Just so you know, that does stay on the backup recording.
Oh my god! I stopped it.
I noticed neither Phil or Mackie noted that. I wonder if that was on.
I wasn't even thinking of it.
I was. Nicely done, Lisa.
Yeah, and I trusted you.
Now, come on. Having been on the show before, you know there's a backup recording.
Yes, I do. I just. Yeah. It's okay.
Thank you for listening to Polycast number 87. Today we were joined by Dan Q,
Bile,
Makalua,
Bye,
the Mian team,
Drifting Away Until Next Time,
QNL,
Auf Wiedersehen,
Fringer Bulax,
Goodbye,
and me, Carson, Goodbye.
shame I have to use up my one forgiveness so early in the year, but oh well.
They're not like bathroom passes, high school teacher.
See, I never had problems with that. Teacher would always let me use it if I wanted to.
I was going to say, we don't need to know about the size of your bladder, man. I mean, it's just personal information.
Oh, it's immense.
He's half bladder. Record date?
January 16th, 2010.
Civilization 4, Warlords and Beyond the Sword sound clips, copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright 2009, Civilized Communication at civcom.net.